Okay, so I'm Jeannie. I am happy to be here. I'm sorry, I've just got this half picture of me, but maybe it won't matter. I'm happy to be here. And no, that didn't make any difference. There we go. There we go. Sorry. I guess it's just kind of fit. Okay, so I'm happy to be here. I have been with ACA 5.5 years and really grateful for the program. Sharing my story tonight is a real milestone in my recovery. I've only recently been able to put enough puzzle pieces together to see that my childhood had a whole layer of reality that I was completely clueless about. And now, with my increased clarity, I can see that my childhood was dramatically different than what I thought I had. So, with my newly increased understanding, I've been trying to write my life history, but it's taking me so long. Everyone's going to be dead by the time I get it done. So I thought it'd be easier just to invite everyone to come listen tonight. I will be sharing a very personal life story, one that I didn't know I had. I appreciate the support of my ACA buddies who are here, and I also invited a lot of family, friends, cousins, nephews, and nieces. None of whom have a background in ACA, and I sure hope this was the right decision. I'm either being very courageous or stupid. You may feel uncomfortable with what I'm going to share tonight. It will certainly be unfamiliar territory for those not familiar with ACA, and you may choose not to even believe it. I've spent a lot of my life feeling very alone, and I hope sharing my inner world will help my family and friends understand me better. ACA tells us our personal story will become our greatest asset, and I'm starting to see that that is true. So this is my life and story that I will be sharing, and it sure took a heck of a lot of work to get here. So with that, let's get started. I had a very confusing childhood that never made sense. Nothing added up. I spent my whole life trying to figure out what the heck was wrong with me. If I really came from a happy, normal family, as my mom stoutly maintained, why was I depressed my whole life? Why did I have a terrible self-esteem? Why was I attracted to unhealthy people who I felt obligated to fix or save? Why did I have problems with every authority figure, including my hairdresser? Why was I my own worst enemy, often sabotaging myself? Only after finding ACA did I discover all the above were survival skills inherited from a dysfunctional childhood. I spent a lifetime unsuccessfully trying to find an answer to my problems. Finally, in desperation, I went to God and said, "Look, I've tried everything. Nothing has worked. I give up. It's your turn." And I got an answer. I was told to look up families of alcoholics. So even God uses Google. And sure enough, there I was. I have 13 of the 14 common characteristics of survivors of childhood trauma. This was my first concrete evidence that finally explained why I felt defective and weird my whole life, despite the seemingly normal-looking family that I grew up in. I am incredibly grateful for the visuals that I receive. It took me some time to realize that my visuals were actually God's way of supporting my recovery work. When I started ACA, I received the visual of a 1,000-piece puzzle with no box cover to explain what the puzzle was supposed to look like. I've spent my life sleuthing through the puzzle pieces, trying to make sense of an unexplainable life. Just so you know, I hate puzzles. When I joined my first ACA meeting, I looked around the room and thought, wow, I have never been in a room with so many damaged people in my life, and they're all willing to admit it. The part I could not figure out was why I felt like ACA was home when my family background was complete opposite of what everyone else in the program had. It was pretty shocking to hear about violent, abusive homes compared to my calm, quiet, supposedly normal family. At my house, there was no yelling, no fighting, no outward abuse. I was never called a bad word in my life, and I thought shut up was a swear word. It took several years in ACA to understand things better. Finally began to see that my normal-looking family actually had the same characteristics found in a dysfunctional alcoholic home. It was just well disguised. And the reason I felt so comfortable at ACA meetings was because I was just as damaged as every other person in the program. Until ACA, I had no idea I actually suffered a lot of emotional abuse. Unintentional, to be sure, but it was still real abuse. My father's alcoholism, my mother's silent suffering, and the big family secret all contributed to the emotional trauma that I unknowingly endured. As a child, I knew something was wrong, but the clear, unspoken message was, look perfect and stay quiet. Only in retrospect, I can see I grew up in an emotional straitjacket. As a child with so much turmoil, I concluded it was all my fault. That inner turmoil and confusion has followed me all the way into adulthood. Let me reiterate that everyone in AC knows, but others may not readily grasp, this inner conflict and trauma is of an emotional nature. It can't be figured out or resolved intellectually. I had to learn that myself. I spent my life keeping all my feelings in my head so I didn't have to feel them. I didn't know intellectualizing was a way to emotionally abandon my inner family. ACA says feeling is healing, and that's because feeling is the only way to support your inner family. Just a quick explanation to those outside the program. You may say, oh, a part of me wants to do something and a part of me doesn't. Well, ACA has identified those internal parts as being an inner child, an inner teenager, and an inner critical parent. And you might have more, but those are the basics. And later we'll get to the solution, which is to develop your own inner loving parent. I grew up in a high-demand religion where alcohol is not allowed. With ACA's help, I slowly discovered that I came from a highly secretive family. That started with my dad. Only after marriage did my shocked mom find out that my dad drank. She then joined my dad in keeping the secret. My dad didn't start out as an alcoholic, but he certainly became one through the years. My mom didn't know that alcoholism is a progressive disease that gets worse with time. And when the three younger of us kids were born, my mom was now in survival mode. She struggled to do her best, but she no longer had the emotional bandwidth to give us five kids the attention that we needed. She was depressed throughout my childhood. She valiantly struggled with poor health and no support. And when she wasn't holding on by her fingernails, she was sick in bed. My mom determined the best way to maintain the illusion was that we were to look like a happy, normal Christian family was to use denial and, of course, secrets. Lots of people use those same tactics. That's not so unusual. But my mom added a second layer of denial by keeping the secret from everyone in the family. She was incredibly disciplined, presenting this false illusion for many years. And my dad helped maintain the secret by never drinking at home. My mom's incredible efforts for secrecy paid off. No one outside or inside the family knew anything was amiss. And to this day, there are family members who still don't believe my dad was an alcoholic. Maintaining the secret enabled my philandering father to face no consequences as he slept around and went on drinking binges. Mary was my dad's drinking partner and long-term mistress, although there were others. Mary's oldest daughter, Susie, and I went to high school together. Since my dad drank at Susie's house, Susie and her siblings readily admitted that my dad and Mary were both alcoholics. My siblings and I remained completely clueless. It was only a couple of years ago that Susie told me my dad got an apartment when we were both 12 so he could have his girlfriends over. My dad got lots of free mileage from the false illusion that was working for him. I received a visual about our family secret. I could see myself as a small child standing next to this gigantic, big metal safe that represented the secret. The safe was so tall it barely cleared the ceiling and so huge it took up all my living space. There was no room for healthy development since that secret was hogging all my space. If I wanted to visit my family, there was barely enough room to squeeze around the safe to get to the other side where my family resided. The secret kept me isolated from myself and my family. I learned the world must be a dangerous place if we have to keep secrets. And as a child, I believed my mother's preoccupation with the secret, which I was supposedly not to know about, was clear evidence that my mom loved the secret more than she loved me. That was a devastating conclusion to come to as a young child. ACA literature tells us that denial is the glue that holds the family dysfunction together and then allows it to be passed on to the next generation. Until you recognize it and come to terms with it, it will automatically be passed on. This has already happened in my family. I was 15 before my mom finally shared the secret that my dad was an alcoholic who'd been having an affair throughout my childhood. I grew up believing secrets keep you safe. No, actually, secrets keep you sick. As the saying goes, you are only as sick as your secrets. There was an additional unspoken message that was equally damaging. If I ever shared our family secret, I would be a traitor to the family. That was a pretty terrifying message. There's a psychologist who believes denial is the biggest addiction in the world. I totally agree. They say short-term denial is used by everyone at some time, but long-term denial can do tremendous damage, especially to children. Denial stands for don't even know it's a lie. Let me share a transformative statement that helped explain my life. Research shows that long-term denial, especially for children, can be emotionally damaging. It creates a false foundation where children are unable to see, feel, or think clearly. Instead of developing a healthy emotional skill set, homes of addiction with high denial result in the children's innate emotional attributes atrophying from lack of use. Children end up being emotionally disabled. Wow. After my mystery childhood, that was exciting to get a statement that by a professional that explained my childhood. I cannot tell you how scary and disorienting it was as a child to not have anything make sense. Since my mom was in complete denial, there was no one to explain anything. I concluded I was the problem, and I must be very stupid since absolutely nothing made sense. Now I know it was just long-term denial that kept me from seeing, feeling, or thinking clearly. Healthy homes encourage discovery and learning, and my unhealthy home encouraged the exact opposite. Knowing that I had atrophied emotional abilities actually explains a lot. My sister recently mentioned getting the silent treatment from others as a huge trigger for her. I immediately recognized that was our childhood, although I had never previously considered that long-term denial is a form of getting the silent treatment. ACA tells us that yelling is a form of emotional abuse and that silence also can be a form of abuse. It was helpful to realize that the silent treatment was the common form of abuse in our home. My mom had no idea the damage it was doing. So in our family, the way to look like a happy, normal family was for everyone to suppress and ignore our feelings, don't ask questions, don't make waves, don't pay close attention to what was happening in the family. And although these rules were never verbally stated, we all got the message and remained silent and shut down. Is it a wonder that in every one of my family suffers from depression? When I first heard the rule for dysfunctional families, don't talk, don't trust, don't feel, I immediately recognized those were the unspoken rules of my childhood. We usually think of the silent treatment as a vindictive way to punish others. My mother was actually, she didn't have a, she was a very kind woman and didn't have a mean bone in her body. She had nothing but the best of intentions. Considering her background and the time she lived in, choosing denial was her only real viable option. She honestly believed denial and secrets was the best way to protect us kids. There was no way she could know how terribly destructive that choice would be. There's a statement, alcoholics have a drinking problem. Children of alcoholics have a thinking problem. Everyone who comes to ACA has lots of faulty, inaccurate thinking that has to be identified and changed in order to get healthy. I do a lot of research trying to make sense of my childhood, and I found another really helpful statement. It turns out that a child's very survival requires that they bond with their parents. If parents have crazy dysfunctional thinking, the child has to embrace that crazy thinking in order to bond with their parents. For me, that was incredibly helpful to realize that denial was the crazy dysfunctional thinking that was used in my family. I was absolutely required to embrace that faulty thinking in order to bond with my parents. Here's another important statement. Denial forces the child to ignore their own feelings and personal logic in order to be attached to their parents who are in denial. Children are then in conflict with their own precepts. This increases their anxiety and fear when the parent's false reality does not match with the perceptions of the child. Wow, another fabulous description of my childhood. With my mom's commitment to that darn secret, I could never trust my own feelings since they did not match the false reality that my mom was promoting. I have had this statement for quite a while, but it was only recently when I was willing to feel instead of think through that statement that I received additional insights. The word invalidate came to my mind, something I had never previously used to explain my childhood. When I shared this insight with my therapist, she said, "Oh, that's chronic invalidation." She explained it to me, and I, of course, went home and looked it up. And here it is. Chronic invalidation is the act of dismissing or rejecting someone's thoughts, feelings, or behavior. It sends the message your feelings are wrong or they don't matter. Chronic invalidation, especially for children, is difficult, resulting in low self-esteem, feelings of worthlessness with an inability to express themselves, self-isolation, distrust, and confusion. Finally, another great explanation of my baffling childhood. So despite never being yelled at or called a bad word in my life, I received the silent but damaging chronic invalidation throughout my childhood. Yes, it was completely unintentional, but again, the damage was still done. Everything in that darn secret completely backfired. Feeling unvalidated explained one of my foundational childhood beliefs. You are all alone. There is no one to help. And no one cares. That's a pretty devastating message for a child. It took a couple years to figure out that my family also had an unspoken gender divide. I initially could not see that my handsome, charming father was a male chauvinist who found subtle destructive ways to demean women. As a child, I could not figure out why everyone in my family was ignoring my sad, neglected mom. I have three older brothers. I believe they all subconsciously responded to my dad's unspoken message that said, "Women are unimportant, so you can ignore your mom. And since women and children have no real value, you can ignore your little sisters as well." My emotionally distraught mom, trying to survive an overwhelming situation with no help, in desperation, she turned to me as the oldest daughter. She nonverbally encouraged me to replace my emotionally absent father. As a terrified child, I would have done anything to save my mom in the hopes that she would then save me. As a parentified child, it was now my job to meet the needs of my family, resulting in lots of shame, which stands for should have already mastered everything. Of course, no healthy parent would do this to a child. The situation just clarified how terribly unhealthy our home was and the desperate straits my mom was in. This is also when my codependence started. Codependence is called a disease or emotional disability. I found it does a great job of contaminating all my relationships, as well as helping me have an unhealthy sense of responsibility for everything, including that earthquake in Tibet. With my parentified role, I believed I had no intrinsic value. My only worth was in serving, saving, and caretaking others. ACA is sometimes called the PhD of the 12-step program, since it's the only program that requires an in-depth analysis of your family. It turned out there are four generations of codependency in my family. My grandma, my mom, and I, as the oldest daughters, we were all parentified along with being codependent, and that emotional disability has now been passed on to my children. I've done the ACA 12-step multiple times, first for myself and then helping others. I've also done the 12 steps for Codependence Anonymous. In their program, they call codependency a form of idolatry. Another source called codependency emotional slavery. That's an interesting term. Every night I get pain throughout my body, from the top of my head down to my toes. This is a manifestation of the unresolved trauma from my childhood that I have yet to figure out how to process. Every night I feel pressure around my ankles and wrists that feels exactly like shackles. Codependency hides out really well in religion. Christianity emphasizes service and sacrifice for others, so my religious background, it was easy to confuse it with codependence, since they look exactly the same. The only way to tell healthy or unhealthy service is to look at the motivation. One therapist who dealt with this issue in her own religious background called codependency Christian cocaine. I received another visual that explained my parentification. This was the only visual that was in black and white. I saw a whole skyline of factories belching out black smoke with contaminated water on the ground. And I thought, gosh, it kind of reminds me of England's Industrial Revolution. Well, that was it. There were no child labor laws when Charles Dickens wrote Oliver Twist. Back then, real children were put to work to help support their poor families. Despite my middle-class background, the dysfunction of our home made us an emotionally poor family. Just as real children help their families survive, I did the same, replacing my absent alcoholic father. I'm quite fragmented with four inner children. The one who went to work is named Ollie, after Oliver Twist, since both of us were forced to go to work at a young age. I have an enmeshed relationship with my mom. Due to unclear emotional boundaries, I could not tell where I ended and where my mom began. Like everything else in my childhood, it was very confusing. As a parentified enmeshed child, I believe the best way to show love to my poor, overwhelmed mom was for me to not have any needs or feelings. My mom could barely keep her head above water. If I shared my burdens, she might sink. As a child, I took my adult responsibilities seriously. ACA tells us our dysfunctional childhood's not our fault. I'm working on that, but I'm not there yet. And that was clarified in the visual of living in a dark, dank dungeon, 5 stories underground. And despite entreaties to leave, I strongly believe I deserve to be punished for being unlovable and for failing to save my family. It's interesting that the dungeon has no bars. It's only my faulty thinking that keeps me imprisoned. When I initially went through the 12-step program, I was surprised to discover I had few memories from my childhood. That seemed really odd. So I found a hypnotist, hopeful that he could unlock my barricaded childhood. Nope, he was unable to hypnotize me. He tried a second method. That didn't work either. But the next morning, I received a visual. I was holding a casserole dish with hot pads because the casserole represented a very hot secret. I went down to the basement. I found a secret door that took me down to another sub-basement. I found another secret door that went down to another sub-basement. The message was, I will go down to 20 sub-basements. This secret is so hot, it will never be shared with anybody, including myself. Clearly, my subconscious still believes that keeping secrets is the best, safest thing to do. A few months later, a cousin who I'd not seen in years came to visit, and in an effort to be honest, I said, no one in our extended family knew that my family was dysfunctional. She said, oh, I knew. Really? How? Your father sexually abused me. Oh my goodness, that was such a shock. That explained the hot secret. That night, I had flashbacks of being sexually abused by my father. The flashback was in third person. I was outside my body, watching the event as an observer. They say this is a common way to dissociate or separate yourself when there's no other possible escape. And they say that this is when the body separates from the emotional self. Well, this was the worst terror I had ever experienced in my life. I was heartsick to realize that as a vulnerable child, I had to face that much terror all by myself. And that explained why I had no memories. It's called dissociative amnesia. I had to disconnect in order to emotionally survive. The question is, have I ever been able to reconnect? Most people don't know about trauma, and that included me, but I've certainly studied up on the topic. I've discovered trauma disconnects you from yourself, from your feelings, from your body, from others, from God, and from nature. So although I look normal, my sexual trauma has definitely disconnected me in multiple ways. 6 months later, after painfully processing that information, I called my cousin again and said, you never told me how old you were when my dad sexually abused you. And she said, I was 18 months to 2 years old. Oh, my heart. And to make matters worse, here in my straight-laced religious family, my cousin was sexually abused by my dad at every family gathering. If my dad was repeatedly doing that to my cousin, just think what he was repeatedly doing to me. And that ongoing abuse reconfirmed my childhood belief, I'm all alone, there's no one to help, and no one cares. It's common for sex abuse survivors to believe that it's their fault. I certainly believe that. I'm getting involved with the 12-step program, Survivors of Incest Anonymous. It's a really painful program that I never could have handled without the skills I've learned in ACA. They believe the victim will have an even deeper sense of personal shame and blame if the sexual predator was someone close to them, which it was in my case. My inner family wholeheartedly believes I must be a totally unlovable, worthless piece of crap that my father would sexually abuse me. I spent years going to bed recalling every embarrassing, humiliating, horrible thing I'd ever done. That's a terrible way to get through life. But until ACA, I didn't realize I had a need to constantly ruminate about humiliating things. I didn't know I was addicted to shame. Shame feels terrible, but it was so familiar, it felt like home. And besides addicted to shame, what else is common about sex abuse? Confusion. layers and layers of overwhelming confusion. Of course, a two-year-old is too young to understand what was happening. So it's incredibly helpful to understand that my confusion is actually a trauma response to the terrifying abuse I endured as a child. Okay, I have spent my whole life believing that I came from a normal, healthy family. So after 5.5 years of hard work in ACA, it's been a shock to discover so much dysfunctionality and abuse. I'm sure my family feels the same way, although they didn't get the benefit of 5 years to come to terms with this. But unfortunately, there's still more abuse. I interviewed my siblings to see how they felt about the long-term denial that we had as kids. They all completely bought into my mom's false narrative and thought that it worked out fine. This helped clarify my unique position in the family. I was the only one who knew as a child that something was wrong. Admittedly, I only knew it subconsciously, but I still knew it. So if I had not been sexually abused by my dad, I could have easily stood with my siblings in fully embracing my mom's false illusions that everything was hunky and dory. So I was the only one in the family who felt angry and betrayed since my mom gaslighted me throughout childhood. Gaslighting is a form of psychological abuse where one person purposely tries to distort the reality of another person, resulting in self-doubt and confusion. Since I do a lot of research, I was happy to find a study done on gaslighting in romantic relationships, and the results were helpful. All gaslighted participants suffered long-term effects, including a diminished sense of self. That's me. They felt broken, worthless, and confused. That's me. Another said, my perception of truth was so warped, it was hard to tell what was true or false or to know what was up or down. That was me. Notice all the participants in the study were adults involved in this manipulative relationship for a minimum of 4 months. And I, on the other hand, was a young child, gaslighted my whole childhood by the one and only responsible adult in my life. There's been a part of me that assumed my mom knew what she was doing. So it was interesting just this week to wake up in the morning with the clear realization my mom was completely clueless about every aspect of my abuse. And that's helpful to know. I also don't fit in the ACA norm. My mom did not grow up in a dysfunctional family. She did have some minor issues that became greatly magnified in my dysfunctional family, resulting in some tremendous damage. When I first heard that we should identify our damage and then forgive our parents, it made me realize the words of Christ on the cross that should be a model for all of us when he said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. That's clearly what I need to do. And I've been working for a couple of years on forgiveness. ACA's solution to all our abuse is to help us develop an inner loving parent, learning to be more compassionate and kind to ourselves. And we have a fabulous book that should be required reading for the whole world, I think. I organized and chair 4 loving parent guidebook groups a week. We have had meetings almost for 3 years. The usual no crosstalk rules in our meetings to be emotionally safe is a huge trigger for my childhood. When people have information that they won't share with me, which includes the no crosstalk rule, it's a trigger for both the silent treatment and being gaslighted for my childhood. When I started these 4 groups, I tweaked the rules so I wouldn't get triggered. We are able to maintain the safety of the group while respectfully responding, sharing, and asking questions. We've had some really helpful discussions that would not be possible in our more regimented meetings. I would love if we had more meetings like this. If any of you are interested and want to come check us out, I've listed the Loving Parent Guidebook classes in the chat. ACA tells us that how we feel about our parents is usually how we feel about God. So that's a double whammy. I can't get healthy without God's help, but I have a hard time believing that God really cares about me because of my childhood. So I discovered I had some unhealthy beliefs about God and that he was very similar to my judgmental, shaming inner critic who constantly let me know I was never good enough. But with the help of the Loving Parent Guidebook, my inner loving parent became stronger and kinder. Then my inner critic stopped being so critical. And then I was surprised to see that God had become more kind and compassionate as well. That was important because later I would have to turn to God and I needed to have a better image of him so that I knew that he did not disapprove of me. So that was helpful. My sister jokes that she and I came from different families. There's some truth to that. All of us siblings had long-term denial, but I was the only one in the family who was parentified, enmeshed, sexually abused, gaslighted, with complex PTSD. After a lifetime of confusion, it's been incredibly helpful to finally identify the abuse and put it in perspective. Every aspect of my abuse was silent, unseen, with no witnesses. No one saw that I was parentified, enmeshed, or gaslighted, or had complex PTSD. My cousin is the only witness to my dad's sexual abuse. And believe me, I get pushback from those who refuse to accept her story since she was only 2 years old at the time. It took 3 years to get my husband on board with my issues, and he kept saying, "Where's your evidence?" Exactly. There was no clear evidence, which makes it so much easier for everyone to stay in denial. And I've had a hard time coming out of denial myself. Unless you are strongly motivated to find the truth, it's just so much easier to stay in denial. I have never met a family like mine in ACA or anywhere else. I didn't realize until ACA that I had a surprisingly difficult family to figure out. Let me share some of the things I've learned in the past 5 years. First, the Loving Parent Guidebook explains that your ethnic or cultural background can, of course, influence your family dynamics. My great-grandparents were from Sweden. They met each other on the boat coming to America, and the first of their 10 children was my grandma, the one who was parentified. I teach a class about different countries and cultures, and while I was researching Scandinavia, it mentioned, never ask a Scandinavian how they feel because feelings are off limits. I thought, oh my goodness, that's my family. So not talking about feelings can be a sign of dysfunction, but not necessarily. In my family, I have generations of healthy people who got along fine, but they downplayed the importance of feelings. It was only after my mom ended up with an alcoholic husband that her family background of not recognizing feelings became a huge disadvantage in our dysfunctional home. Second point, my sister recently said, no matter what a person says, just look at their behavior to see what's really going on. Well, that's generally true, but there seem to be a few exceptions to that in my family. I have several family members, including my mom and myself. We don't act out. We just shut down. That makes it a lot harder to gather evidence when there isn't any. And my inner family is exactly like my biological family. After 5.5 years, they still remain mostly shut down and are just now barely starting to talk. Next, I already mentioned that the all-important messages in my family were communicated nonverbally. You will hear people in the program say, well, my dad said, no one wants to hear from you, so shut up. Well, yes, that's an invalidating and painful comment, but how very fortunate you are to have some confirming evidence. My parents seem to specialize in nonverbal communication. As children, we siblings picked up on their nonverbal messages, but now that lack of evidence makes it really easy for everyone to claim that nothing happened. My therapist thinks that my mom's messages went from my mom's subconscious to my subconscious without even seeing the light of day. Well, we are sure not going to get any evidence from that, are we? I have a shocking amount of evidence, especially considering my family background. On my mom's side, I am the sixth generation of religiously upright relatives. Most of my mom's family is quite normal, which makes my abuse seem all the more bizarre. It is so out of the blue, I might as well be from Mars. But I can't be too hard on my family's lack of emotional support because I am exactly the same. Last year, my inner critic showed up twice, 2 months apart, to bawl me out for failing to support and validate my inner family. So here I'm doing the Loving Parent Guidebook 4 times a week for almost 3 years. And yes, I still wasn't validating my inner family. So yes, my family and I are very much in the same boat. But when I realized that this was before I realized that I had so much personal abuse with no family to support me, I was devastated. That was when I hit a new bottom. And that is when I found God. ACA talks about the gift of desperation. It's true. When you have no other options and get desperate enough, then God shows up. Every 12-step program tells you that you can only be healed with God's help. That is very true. So if God is the answer, I decided I needed to make God and his resources a higher priority in my life. Let me tell you some of the ways that I'm doing that. What is my time? Does anybody know? Oh, wow. I'm only at 35 minutes. I am speeding so fast. I guess I can slow down. I have only 5 minutes left. When I realized that I have so much, okay. So here are the things that I'm going to talk about. The things that helped me put God in my family more, in my life more. I never previously realized that my very confusing life, I couldn't have figured that out with the help of all my visuals. They have been very informative, and they are even revelatory. The visuals have helped me realize God is the only one who has the ability to validate my confusing childhood and how grateful I am for that. After a childhood of lies and illusions, I am suspicious when I don't get the truth. My visuals never lie. That is comforting to know as I honor a God who will give it to me straight. After a lifetime of believing that God could not possibly love me, my visuals have provided clear confirmation of God's interest and concern for me. I'm still working on feeling loved, but that's okay. I'm at least moving in the right direction. There is a hymn that says, "Earth has no sorrow that heaven cannot heal." I'm finding that to be true. My mom passed away 40 years ago. It's been an incredible blessing to have her come back to me twice to apologize for my childhood. Here on earth, she could not see the damage that was going on, but she certainly gets it now. My siblings may not choose to see things the way I do, so it makes it all the more comforting to have my mom know and validate my childhood. They say meditation is an important vehicle to access God. I have found that to be true. I'm quite repressed, so the best times for me to be emotionally open to God is in the middle of the night. And so that's when I do my best meditation. If you want to talk to God, pray. If you want God to talk to you, learn to meditate. I have felt so alone most of my life, so when I started writing my life history, I was surprised to hear a voice that said, "I have been with you all your life." Wow, I don't know who that was, but I'll take it. And I think there's a lot more going on than we are aware of. I heard a song that said, "It's hard to imagine, but surely it's true. Somewhere in heaven, God is thankful for you." That is a beautiful concept that I hope I can, well, I do affirmations to try to embrace that more fully in my life. So affirmations is an important way to move forward. ACA tells us that our inner children have a natural bond with God. So I went to my inner kiddos and told them first how grateful I was for their natural affinity with God. They were so excited and proud. I sure need to do that more often. Then I asked if maybe we could make this an inner family project where we help each other find a way to connect more with God as a family project. That was a cool idea as well. And one thing that I'm discovering is how important it is for me to show up for my family and for us to practice just hanging out together. That is a new thing for me and how very satisfying that is. I also have entrenched negative thinking. I have to work hard to counter that. So sometimes when I get discouraged, I turn to my community of heaven. These are angels and ancestors who live in the next world, but are able to provide support to me here on earth. And I imagine them saying, "Jeannie, we are so impressed with your diligence and hard work. And when you show up in heaven, we're going to throw you a huge welcome home party to honor all your work in getting healthy." That helps me get out of my funk. Feeling God's validating power has lowered my anxiety. I feel more safe and protected. I'm starting to feel more integrated and whole. I'm feeling less codependent on others. My inner family is finally starting to trust me, partly because I'm finally getting better as a loving parent, where I recognize that feelings are the essential way to access my inner children, not through intellectualizing. Let me close with another visual. I saw the Grand Canyon, and I was going to have to walk from one side of the canyon all the way to the other. Because you can't go around your issues, you have to go through them. And my heart sank because I thought, oh no, I'm going to have to do this all alone. Then Jesus showed up in a hot air balloon, and he said, "You don't have to do this alone. Hop into my hot air balloon and we can cover the same territory without so much pain." Maybe he even serves punch and cookies on the ride. I don't know. But whenever God offers me a ride, I'm going to take it. Thank you for letting me share with you today. Pass.